Welcome to the Angry Admins podcast for February 26, 2007, episode 17. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Angry Admins podcast. My name is Joe Bibby, and I'm here with
Ryan Necessary.
We're coming to you from Houston, Texas. In case you didn't know, we are the Angry Admins, and this show is a little bit about technology in the workplace, at home, and where we think information technology is headed.
Yes.
So, first story we wanted to cover this week is Ryan.
Okay. We have a story about a guy in Anchorage, Alaska. Who was arrested for using his local library's wireless access after hours. So apparently the guy was sitting in the parking lot playing a game on his laptop, and the cops drive up and they take his laptop from him, and he's in all kinds of trouble. And at first glance you think, well, what's the big deal? And if you dig into the story a little bit, you find out that the guy, he has this habit of driving all over town looking for Wi-Fi, and then he just, you know, leeches off of whatever he can find to play online games. Mm-hmm. So the cops had warned him the day before, hey, don't do this, you know, this is, right. You know, there's rules about, you know, what you can access. And so they caught him the next day in front of the library, and they took his laptop from him to apparently, quote unquote, look for, to see what he was doing, you know. But his complaint was, well, I come here during the day, and, you know, why shouldn't I be able to come here, mm-hmm. you know, at night? It's a public place. But apparently the library has, usually they turn off the Wi-Fi when they close, mm-hmm. but right now something's being changed on it, so it got left on. And their accusation is that, well, he knows it's not supposed to be on right now, and he's still using it anyway.
Yeah.
But the guy was 21 years old, and, you know, he's an avid online gamer. So apparently he was... Now, if he is deep into games, he doesn't have that internet at home. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. But, this whole thing, you know, it seems like every few months we get a story like this where some guy gets arrested, supposedly, in quotes, for using open Wi-Fi, and it always seems like there's always a little more to the story than mm-hmm. what they tell you. It's not just some guy quickly checking his email outside someone's free open access point. You know, he's either doing something shady, or he's done it before and the police have asked him not to, and, you know, that, I don't know.
They did make a good point, though, that, you know, we're quickly coming to a time where you're not going to be able to tell what people are doing, because, like, you know, you and I both know people with the broadband cards for the laptop.
Right, yeah.
You know, what's to say, well, I'm not talking to the library, I'm talking to, you know, the cell phone tower. And how are the cops going to know what you're doing? Are they just going to take everybody's laptop?
And you know, they're not always the most informed. You know, the people that are out there protecting us, you know, I have a lot of respect for them, but not all cops really know anything about technology. I mean, they have computers in their police cars now, so it's, you know, mm-hmm. they're more advanced than they were several years ago, but they may not even understand the difference. Mm-hmm. So it is something to watch out for, I agree. Yeah.
So what else we got?
So the Google apps, I think we've briefly touched on this before, but this week they finally released the paid version of their hosted apps. They're calling this the Google Apps for Enterprise. And basically what this is it's combining all of their services together, Docs and Spreadsheets, Gmail, Google Talk, and a few other little things, into a combined package that you can use with your domain. Now, I've been using this for my personal domain for a while now. I'm using the free version, which is, you know, they kind of beta tested for a while, and it's gotten significantly better in the last few weeks, ramping up. I could tell for something, and this is what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been pretty happy with it. The enterprise version is a little better than what I have. For one, you don't have to have the ads in your Gmail and that kind of thing, and you get 10 gigs of storage instead of the 2 point something that you get normally. So that's nice to have more space, and, you know, you can keep it for a long time. It's a fixed amount, but there's nothing saying that they won't increase it. There is a charge. It's $50 per user per year, which is pretty reasonable if you think about the price of an office license per person. You know, if you're not a heavy spreadsheet user type of business environment, you mm-hmm. know, this could probably work pretty well for you.
Right. So say I have some applications that I need. Do you really think that these Google apps are ready for prime time, though?
So to me, I would say the Google apps, Gmail is definitely ready for prime time. You know, it's been tested. the docs and spreadsheet stuff, I don't think even Google would say that it's a replacement for Office. Mm-hmm. But if collaboration is your big thing, they really have that, right, kind of knocked out. And if all you need is basically like what WordPad provides,
right,
then this is perfect.
And I probably also, most people don't utilize Excel to its fullest.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some crazy, the accountants out there who can like make PowerPoint presentations inside Excel.
Advanced equations.
Most people are just, summing lists and, doing general basic table calculations, mm-hmm, which you can even do in Word, so you don't need Excel for it.
Right. Mm.
But it's definitely not going to be an Office replacement. So what else we got, Ryan?
Okay, so TiVo over at their website has the new TiVo Desktop 2.4 public beta that's now available. The big deal about this software is it allows you to do encode your own videos to watch on your TiVo unit. Now it has been possible before. I know last year you and I were messing around with some of this stuff with, mm-hmm, Galleon, and
right,
I used like Premiere Elements on my home desktop to transcode some videos that I downloaded so that I could watch it on my TiVo.
Mm-hmm.
Now this was quite a bit of trouble. So
yeah, it was a pain.
I think the thing that really stopped me was not the transcoding, because it's something that I could just kick off and play games or do whatever else on a different computer while it was crunching. What killed it for me was trying to move the videos back across my home network to,
right,
my TiVo,
right,
because my old Series 2 is only, I guess, 10 megabit.
Mm-hmm.
So it's painfully slow, and I pretty much gave up moving files back and forth to my TiVo. So I don't know. The other thing that they're promising pretty soon is the ability to have high def photos, like 1200. Let's see, what is it? 1280 by 720 photos on your computer that you could then browse on your TiVo unit, on your television. My whole thing is I'm kind of done with the whole TiVo desktop on the PC.
Yeah, I mean, we've both had a TiVo for a little over a year now, and I'm happy with it. But you're right. I mean, all this extra stuff, I don't really use it.
Mm-hmm.
I use some of the integrated Yahoo functionality to check weather sometimes, and
mm-hmm,
I don't know. I'd have to try this out. I mean, I'm probably not going to pay the fee because it's not really worth it to me.
Right. $25. I mean, come on.
Yeah. It's not that much, but I don't know. It doesn't seem like it's really something that I would use that often, just because it takes so long. It's not, mm-hmm, going to be on demand like the Apple TV is going to be, where you can stream it immediately. Right. So.
And the only things you can convert are like non-protected sources.
So right.
Like, well,
right.
Windows media files and H.264, MPEG-4, stuff like that. So,
mm-hmm,
I don't know. I'm not sure how useful it is, but TiVo, I guess they're still hanging in there.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I do have one little tip for if any of our listeners are TiVo users. I recently actually went to cancel my subscription because I canceled cable, and it just didn't seem like it was worthwhile keeping that $12.95 fee every month, mm-hmm, just for a few channels. So I call them and tell them I want to cancel, and they're like, oh, we're sorry to hear you go. And they offered me the lower rate. So I'm only paying now $6.95 a month. Now, I can't guarantee this will work for everybody, but she was very, very quick to offer that extra discounted fee for me. Mm, so
interesting.
If you want to pay half price TiVo, give it a try. I mean, the worst they can do is say, nope, sorry, we have nothing else to offer. And then you're like, oh, never mind, I changed my mind.
Yeah. I mean, I like my TiVo. I wish there were more things on television that I wanted to watch so that I, mm-hmm, could get more use out of it. But I don't know, paying more, for extra functionality, I just can't see doing. And I'm afraid of the day when this thing croaks, because, when my TiVo dies, I'm not going to pay what they want for the Series,
right,
3, which,
yeah,
is pretty expensive. So.
Yeah, it is. It's too bad. They're trying, though. They're trying to make a comeback. We'll, yeah, see what happens. So the next story on our list, this one got me to chuckle a little bit. So apparently there are several ATM machines out there that are using Windows as their backend. Now, first off, everybody knows that that just doesn't sound like a good idea. But some of them have been hacked in the past, I guess, to send out money. But there was a story on, I think this was on Engadget, or maybe it was via Dig. Either way, we'll have a link in the show notes to this, but basically, all it is a cell phone picture of a of a ATM machine, and it just says "pwned," and it looks like somebody just wrote it with their their finger. So apparently what happened is somebody was able to dig in and get into the actual Windows backend, and they opened up Paint. And because it's a touchscreen, they were able to like actually use Paint to make some images. So now instead of your basic like screensaver thing that those ATMs use, it just says pwned, and then it says like Mew was here. It's, you know, it's just, and it wasn't anything malicious. That's what I like about this. It wasn't, you know, somebody wasn't stealing, or maybe they did, but it's just, you know, showing, hey, maybe you should think about what you're doing instead of using Windows as your back end for an ATM.
Right. What's next? Windows e-voting machine.
Right. Yeah. Actually, I just saw a story today about they're wanting to use Windows for some of the new Navy battleships.
Oh, no.
And there was this big complaint because it's not real time. And
right.
You know, who knows? I mean, some politician probably just got a big lump of money to get that to go through. But that has me worried, too.
Yeah, I can't see it handling multi-user very well.
No, I mean, I haven't verified this, so that could just be forum garbage, but either way, that's just a bad idea in general.
I mean, a battleship is huge, so sure, use it for the onboard, you know, email or whatever, but don't use it for your command and control
right,
system.
Yeah, that just seems like a really bad idea. So.
So today, what was it, the anniversary?
Today, February 26th. Is the anniversary of the very first web browser.
Yeah.
February 26th, 1991, Tim Berners-Lee created an application called World Wide Web. A lot of people think NCSA Mosaic was the first web browser, but it actually was not. It was the first popular one, but Tim Berners-Lee, who kind of actually created the World Wide Web, created this app called World Wide Web. Later it was renamed, but I don't know, you know, if you think about it, 1991, that's just 16 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
That's really not that long. And now we have Google Apps, basically a better version of what Office was back then.
Right.
Running completely on server side on a web browser.
In some ways, we've come very far. And then in other ways, we have done a terrible job at moving forward.
Yeah. I think it's interesting. You know, you can still find some of these websites, these guys who, you know, still make websites like they were back in 1991, where it's just kind of a document on the web like it was originally created to be.
Mm-hmm.
Another little tidbit, too, that this was actually created on a Next computer. Mm-hmm. This was the company that Steve Jobs created after he got booted from Apple.
Yeah.
I thought that was kind of ironic. I didn't know that until I read this story, but...
Interesting.
That was... A little interesting little tidbit there.
It's hard to imagine a time, you know, you talk about that time period. It's hard to imagine a time when personal computers are starting to take off from like Apple and, you know, the IBM clones.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird to imagine those days where you have computers in the home, but they don't do anything.
Yeah.
They're just all by themselves.
Right.
They're plugged into the wall and maybe a dot matrix printer if you were really fancy.
Yeah.
And that's it. And now, you know, when your internet goes down, your computer feels stupid.
Yeah, it does.
Because
it does.
If it's not connected to a network, your computer, it's a game terminal, maybe, and maybe a word processor. But for everything else that most people use it for, you know, your email, your productivity, your scheduling, your planning, collaboration, all this stuff that we, you know, count on, when you're off the network, all that's gone. So now you just have like this broken thing on your desk that you just are not happy with. So.
Yeah, I mean, I really think probably, if I had to guess, I would say 97 to 98% of my time is at least connected to a network in some way where I'm using that network, whether it's the internet or whether it's the Exchange server at work or, you know, some sort of networking.
File server.
Yeah.
Network printer.
And if you, it's kind of funny because... You know, my computer is this very fast, very nice machine, yet I'm not really just using it. Now, I am using a lot of its processing power, but, I mean, even things like video editing, and I mean, I'm pulling stuff off of a file server somewhere before I even get started. We really have come a long way from the days with, you know, the big floppy disks and where you can't even turn on your computer without putting a floppy disk in. And now you could just plug it into a network and turn it on and have it boot up to a remote OS.
Yeah, I would argue that we're at the point now where the network is the point and the computer is almost a secondary thing.
Mm-hmm. I would agree. I mean, especially if, you know, if you think about our show where we kind of did our predictions and we talked a lot about YouTube and all these network collaboration things, Dig, you know, that's where we get our news. I mean, I haven't picked up a newspaper except for maybe to look at classifieds in years.
Right.
And I can't imagine, I mean, I don't even go to like a central site. I'm pulling stuff from all over with my RSS reader.
Mm-hmm.
I can't imagine living without the internet anymore.
Well, I think younger people in particular don't trust traditional media sources anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the major news networks, traditional newspapers, they're so slanted, they're so one-sided, and people are just tired of it. They would rather go out, bookmark the sites that they prefer, and make their own decisions versus having this canned, you know, programming, mm-hmm. you know, public mental programming thing pushed out to them every night about what they should be thinking.
Well, it's just, I don't know, thinking back on it, it's amazing to me how quickly the web has become a central part of our lives. And, you know, I was reading a little bit about this a few weeks ago, and apparently it was kind of just a happenstance where, you know, the creation of the World Wide Web happened around the same time this senator pushed a bill through that made commercial enterprise on the internet legal.
Wow.
So it's like these two things came together, and it just kind of led to this quick buildup. You know, it took a few years, and then finally it was like this exponential growth where it just exploded. You know, you had the dot-com era of the 90s,
mm-hmm.
and then it exploded, and all these people lost money, and now we're kind of back in that mode again where everybody's making money online.
Mm-hmm.
And imagine a world without that interconnectedness. I can't even imagine it.
It would be very bizarre, wouldn't it?
It would. And now we're getting the internet on our phones. We're getting it everywhere.
Right. And then, I mean, every night, if you look at the news, traditional media, it's obvious that they hate what's happened.
Yeah.
Because they've lost control.
Mm-hmm.
And if they do talk about the internet, invariably it's a story about child porn on the internet,
yeah.
or internet yeah. chat room stalkers, or, you know, hacking and virus outbreaks. And they're just mm-hmm. showing you, I mean, of course, all their news is all bad anyway. But they're always careful to always frame the internet in a bad light,
mm-hmm.
because that's their competition.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Too bad for them. Because it's here to stay.
That's right. We've got a nice little tool this week. We are both pretty faithful users of Dig. We've both been using it for quite a while now, and we both kind of agree on some of the frustrations of Dig. You know, the big problem is you get these small sites, you know, for example ours, if we got dug, we'd probably be in trouble in that once we get hit with a certain amount of traffic, our site host just, we're not used to getting that much traffic, so the database goes down, or, you know, the site goes over their bandwidth allotment, and you can't get to that content anymore. So there's this story that has, like, you know, 2,500 digs, that's the comments, it's like, oh, this story's amazing, you gotta see it, and then you click on the link and it just never loads.
Mm-hmm.
So there's people generally link in the comments to the Coral Cache or the Google Cache, or there's a site called Doug Mirror that's been around for, I want to say, 5-6 months now.
Does
that sound
least.
Right? Where the whole site is designed to mirror stories on Dig. Doug Mirror, very simple. There's some negative publicity surrounding it because the person does serve ads, so he's not even creating any content, but he's serving ads based on it. But the ads that are in the page do load,
mm-hmm.
but people don't like that it feels like he's kind of stealing clicks away. But in my mind, it's fair because he's not stealing clicks. So the tool is not Doug Mirror. The tool is taking advantage of Doug Mirror, and the tool is called Dugged, D-U-G-G-E-D. It's a plugin for Firefox, and all this does is, it's very simple. It adds a small link right next to the comments link under the Dig story to the Dig Mirror. That's all it does, and it works fantastic. I've been using it for a couple weeks, and it's not in an obvious spot, so you don't feel like you're going to click that first every time.
Mm-hmm.
You'll only go back to it and be able to just quickly link to a story, so you can actually read the story and decide whether you want to dig it or not.
Right. And for those, you know, that aren't familiar with it, digg.com is just a website where people vote on news stories mm-hmm. that get submitted. So, in a lot of times there'll be a news story pointed to maybe a personal blog or mm-hmm. some photographs on someone's website or, you know, something interesting.
Right.
But this person's website is not set up to handle gigantic traffic.
Yeah.
So a lot of times you try to follow the link off of dig.com, and then, at, you know, like Joe said, you get nowhere. It's mm-hmm. like server down, it's timed right. out or whatever. So Doug Mirror kind of was born out of that frustration, like, okay, we're just going to cache it, and mm-hmm. you can check out this other cache. But this thing that adds the link right there, I think that's pretty sweet.
Yeah, and you know, people have been asking the creators of Dig to do this for a long time, and they're like, well, you know, they don't want to do it because it will be kind of stealing ads, and, you know, they're already kind of leeching from everybody else because they're not creating any content either. Mm-hmm. So I think it's this delicate balance, and a third-party plugin is the way to go.
Right.
So go check it out. Tell us what you think. Site of the Week. Okay, we have a Site of the Week, and the site is showusthecode.com. Now, what this is basically the whole site is an open letter to Steve Ballmer. That's right, our good friend over at Microsoft. Chair-throwing, sweat-faced Steve Ballmer.
The man possessed with no rationality.
And so what this is referring to is he's been going around for the last, I want to say, month or two saying, oh, yeah, those Linux guys, man, they're encroaching on our patents, and there's all this code in Linux that's stolen code from Microsoft, and you better watch out because we're going to sue you. But he never says what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And so this site is a letter saying, basically, we of the Linux world, we don't want your code, so please tell us what it is, because we will take it out. We specifically do not want any Microsoft code in here. I mean, that's kind of summing it up.
Right.
You go and read the whole letter, because it's actually pretty well written in general. But and then there's a place for comments for people that, like, you know, yeah, we agree or whatever. Really, all it is Microsoft is scared of Linux, and they're trying to scare businesses away from it so that they, you know, the big savior of Linux is it's cheaper. Well, if you're about to get sued, then it's not going to be cheaper, and people are going to be worried about using it. Oh, we'll just get Windows. That's just a scare tactic, obviously, because they're not telling anybody what it is. And they, you know, the letter talks about, you know, don't you want your shareholders to show that you're defending your IP, in that, you know, you're going to tell us what it is so we can take it out. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. It's a clever little retort to Steve Ballmer, and it's actually gaining a lot of ground. This just came out, from what I understand, just a few days ago, and it's really spreading like wildfire because people really want to get behind this, and they're frustrated with all the Novell, Microsoft, you know, all these deals that really don't need to exist.
How's Vista working out?
Man, I was so excited about it when I finally got it working, and, you know, I gave that big review and I said, yeah, you know, don't buy it yet, but if it comes with your computer, you should be happy. But it's like this past week, you know, I was kind of forced to start using it all the time.
Yeah.
Because my laptop was unavailable, and it's just started failing me big time. I mean, you know, I've complained about the stupid UAC thing, you know, do you want to do this? Okay. But, like, it's just not booting fast anymore, and, like, I tried to load some of my apps that I hadn't installed yet, some, like, Photoshop and some of those, it's older versions, but it should still load okay, you would think. And it hung for, like, a good half hour, 45 minutes during the middle of the install process, and I just left it and came back, and then it was done. So something weird is going on with these old Windows installers. I did a search and couldn't find anything, so maybe I'm the only one seeing this.
And your computer's not even a year old.
No, my computer is, you know, fairly new, and I've got 2 gigs. Oh, here's the other thing that I noticed. So supposedly Vista is like caching your software into RAM.
Mm-hmm.
So I have 2 gigs of RAM. Should be plenty for Vista, right? The minimum is 512. They recommend 1 gig. I have twice the recommended amount. So I checked my task manager, and my RAM was all used up. I was like, what is going on? And apparently it's this caching thing. And I feel like it's slowing me down. I mean, maybe it's in my head, but I noticed it was slower significantly this week. And so it's not like I saw that the RAM was used and then I thought, oh, it is slower. I don't know. Games still seem to run just fine. But, man, I'm so disappointed. I mean, I'm trying to figure out what it adds. You know? I'm not using anything new.
What are the odds that you're infected after 7 days?
Oh, I know. Yeah.
You know, it's whatever.
Well, and I'm running antivirus, so... I wasn't at first, but I mean, I barely was using the thing.
Do you have Office yet?
I'm running Office 2003, but that's been on there since like day one.
Right, and it's really starting to slow down.
Yeah, I mean, I tried to think back, you know, what I installed recently, but I hadn't installed anything until it started slowing down, and then it was when I tried to start installing things.
Do you think it's learning your preferences,
man,
and it's going to speed up in the future?
It's really starting to piss me off. I mean, I didn't spend a lot of money on it, but I want to just go back to XP.
Yeah.
Oh, and then so on the RAM thing, I saw a story this week where a guy did a study on how much RAM is optimal for Vista, and apparently he thinks that it's 4 gig. So I'm not even halfway to that. So maybe I just need to spend more money. Get my computer to run Vista.
No, I don't think that's it.
No, that's not going to do it. Well, that's going to wrap it up for this week. We are the Angry Admins, and I want to thank you all for listening and tuning in to our little podcast. We do have a website, so please go check that out if you are just finding us through iTunes. Our website is angryadmins.com. Very simple, very easy to get to. And that's where we post our show notes, and we have an archive of our old recordings. There's also a link to our forum on there. Please go check that out and add whatever you feel like. We try to keep that pretty up to date when we hear updates on stories and that kind of thing. We post that on there, and we'd love to get you guys interacting on there and getting your feelings about the show and about the stories we cover and any ideas you have. That'd be a great place to post that. And I want to thank those of you who have registered on there. So that's really going to be about it for this week. So again, my name is Joe Bibby.
And my name is Ryan Necessary.